understand it too, in these words that I say, I'll close my eyes to everyone but you, and when I do, I'll see you standing there. My heart to any other caress. I'll never say yes to a new love affair. If you are not there, to share each lovely day, and through the years, those moments when we're far apart, don't you know?
And welcome to Writers on Writing on KUCI 88.9 FM. We're broadcasting from the campus of the University of California, Irvine. And on the web at KUCI.org, I'm Barbara DeMarco Barrett. Writers on Writing features authors, poets, literary agents, and editors discussing the art and business of writing. And what you hear here today is the opinions of my guest and myself, and not the regents of the University of California, Irvine. Today my guest is Natalie Goldberg. She lives in northern New Mexico and is the author of Writing Down the Bones, Wild Mind, Long Quiet Highway, Banana Rose, and Living Color, a book about her work as a painter. She teaches writing in workshops nationwide. Her latest book is Thunder and Lightning, Cracking Open the Writer's Craft, published by Bantam. Hi, Natalie.
Hi.
Great to talk to you.
It's good to talk to you, too.
You know, I love this book, Thunder and Lightning, and I think I must have bought one of the original Writing Down the Bones when it first came out in 86, and was amazed back then with that book. And this one is interesting in that pretty close to the beginning, you talk about how writing is one thing, but structure is another. And that's an interesting development, isn't it?
Yes. Well, that was actually a very big discovery for me. In Writing Down the Bones, I was young and gung-ho, and I just wanted to know how to write, how to get that pen to paper and get out what was inside me. But in Thunder and Lightning, I studied what I've been doing for the last 15 years with writing practice that I write about in Writing Down the Bones. How did I take those notebooks and then create books?
Mm-hmm.
And the main thing, which nobody talks about, is structure.
Yes.
You need a structure.
So when you began Thunder and Lightning, did you know where it was going? Did you know it was about structure? And
yes, I did, but I didn't know how to... See, what I really do is study what I do and then try to put it into words that make sense and that help people. And so I knew it was structure, but I didn't know... I had to figure out how to explain it and have people find their own organic structure to fill. In other words, so you have a structure and then you can fill it with your words.
Mm-hmm.
How do you want to structure a book? In three sections, in short pieces, that simple kind of physical structure. And then also from that you find the deeper inner structure. What is it you want to say underneath what you say?
Yes. Now, what do you think about content and context? I mean, because you write in so many different forms. You write poetry, you write fiction, you write nonfiction. Do you, when you get an idea, when you start writing, do you know where it's going to fit, and do you need to know from the start, or do you wait until it tells you whether it's a poem or whether it's an essay, whether it's a book?
I also have written a novel, Banana Rose. I know if it's going to be fiction or nonfiction. That I know. Then I also know if it's going to be a poem, because a poem is a completely different structure. Do I want to make a stroke, like a painting stroke, or do I want to build a whole building?
And can what you begin, say, as a shorter piece ever become a longer piece, or vice versa?
Oh, yes, I'm afraid so. Sometimes you start something and you promise yourself, this is just going to be a little essay, and then as you get into it, one thing unfolds into another.
Yes.
And then, of course, the opposite is true. I'm going to write a great book about Jell-O, and then you realize you only have about 8 things to say about Jell-O.
Mm-hmm.
So, along
those lines, when you get a book idea, say for the books that you have written, does the structure come to you first or the content?
It's usually the content, but the content, I don't know everything I'm going to say, because writing is the act of discovery. If I know everything I'm going to say, why write? It's not any fun.
Mm-hmm.
But I have a sense where I'm going. But excuse me. But then I need to find a structure to set up so that I can start wandering.
Yes.
Otherwise, I might wander off the edge of the earth.
Mm-hmm.
But the structure doesn't always come immediately either. You know, I feel like I'm talking in some vague way, but I'm not really. It takes some time. Like, I carry an idea in my belly around for quite a while before I write a book. I don't just decide one day, oh, look, there was a car accident on the corner. That's a good thing to write about. It has to come from a deep-rooted place and have enough energy that I'll be willing to work on it for a year, 2, 3 years, whatever it takes.
Now, you must be the one who made free writing famous. Millions of people are free writing now, and what I get asked in the classes that I teach, I often am asked whether they should free write when they're into a project, or if they're into a project, is it okay not to free write? What do you do? Do you free write no matter what?
Yeah, well, first I want to say I call it writing practice. I know people call it free write, but writing practice, because it's a real practice that you can do and be free to fail there and not know where it's going to go. But yes, I free write, or I do writing practice sometimes to figure out ideas. Like, I'll think, in this chapter, what do I need? And I might free write rather than thinking, because sometimes if I think, I can just go around in my head. But if I put pen to paper and say, go, 10 minutes, what is going to be in this chapter? And then I just turn over things. Oh, how about a turkey? Nah, that's a dumb idea, Natalie. And I just kind of write my way through it. So I do it in order to discover things. I also do it to loosen myself up. And I also do it sometimes. I'll find my writing getting tight, like I want to finish too quickly, and I need to relax. And also, I have things in my life that are bothering me. So if I do a 10-minute writing practice before, I can let some of that stuff out so my actual writing on a book doesn't get smelly mm-hmm. with the stuff in my life that I haven't worked out.
Interesting. Will you read to us?
Oh, sure.
And if you just tuned in, you're listening to Writers on Writing on KUCI 88.9 FM. My guest is Natalie Goldberg, author of Thunder and Lightning.
I guess I'll read from Thunder and Lightning, and I'll give you a choice. I'll either read from The Warning at the beginning or a small section on memoir.
Oh, read from The Warning.
Okay.
Maybe you can do the other one in the second half.
Okay. Instead of an introduction, I have a warning. So in Writing Down the Bones and Wild Mind, I tell everybody, go for it. And in this one, I have a warning. I have not seen writing lead to happiness in my friends' lives. I'm sorry to say this. I, who just 15 years ago published a book telling everyone to grab their notebooks and write their asses off. No high like it, I said, and I meant it, and it was true. Now I'm past 50, and I have given everything to writing, the way a Zen master watches her breath and burns through distraction. Was I a fool to do this? Did I choose the wrong path? I once told my great teacher, Katagiri Roshi, if I put the effort into Zazen that I put into writing, I'd be sitting where you are. Yes, yes, he beamed. But I didn't. Whatever small insight I eked out of meditation, whatever breakdown of illusion I realized, or moment I stepped outside ego's poisons, I dedicated wholeheartedly to illuminating the writing path. 8 years after my first book came out, I'd written three others in that time. I was sitting a Zen practice period in California. For 8 weeks, we woke up at 5 a.m., meditated for several hours each day, worked in the fields, studied, chanted, listened to lectures. Every week, we had an individual meeting with the abbot, who is Norm Fisher, a friend of mine and also a serious poet. During the third week, when it was my turn to go in and speak with him, I said, Norm, when I sit a lot, as I'm doing now, what comes up way down at the bottom is that my heart is still broken from bringing out writing down the bones. I've done therapy. I've learned good professional boundaries. But you handle your success. You've helped so many. I've cut him off. I want you to hear me. Below all that, when I'm in this zendo day after day, all I feel is an aching. I was so innocent. I didn't know what it meant to put my heart in the marketplace. A long silence. I knew this time he'd heard me. You know, he said, what I've seen, and this comes from my own close observations, is art leads to suffering. I have a lot of poet friends. The ones who've made it are miserable, and the ones who haven't, when I go to visit them, they whip out a newly published anthology and point out a poem. See, this isn't as good as mine, and he's getting published. Luckily, you have a foot in another world, Zen, so you won't get swallowed up. I wasn't so sure. I had been certain art would save me. I knew all my writing friends felt the same way. After all, what could be better? I thought back to the first poem I'd ever written about an Ebinger's blackout cake. In the shine of the icing, I saw God. I never felt so complete as I did that afternoon writing on my bed in Ann Arbor, Michigan. I poured my soul out on the page, and it shimmered back at me. And now this? Art leads to suffering? But it was true. I'd seen it again and again. Why hadn't any of us realized it? Why hadn't we put on the brakes? All my friends had tasted the sweetness of writing, aflame with longing to make our mark. We didn't know what lay ahead, dislocation, isolation. And then it goes on for several pages.
I found that when I read that part of the book, I found it surprising and kind of wonderful that you were that this was your slant, that this is this was this book. I don't know if I'm making any sense, but I'm curious at what point in the writing process did this introduction, this warning, come to you? Was it there at the beginning of the book?
Yes, it was at the very beginning. I felt that I had to tell the truth. I had gone on, after Writing Down the Bones came out, and wrote 5 more books. I worked very hard, and when I'd be sitting alone working, I'd think sometimes, that young Natalie Goldberg had no idea where this was going to lead. Now, that does not mean, as I go on in the introduction, maybe I should read the last paragraph, because what I'm saying is, if you really take it on, it's hard. But
read that last paragraph.
Let me see if I can... Know that you will eventually have to leave everything behind. The writing will demand it of you. Bare-boned, you're on the path with no markers, only the skulls of those who never made it back. But I have made the journey, and I have made it back, over and over again. I will act as your guide. Now that you've been warned, let me also say this. If you want to know what you're made of, if you want to stand on death's dark face and leave behind the weary yellow coat of yourself, then just now, I hear it, the heavy wooden doors of the cloister of no return are creaking open. Please enter.
Mm. Again, you've been listening to Natalie Goldberg read from Thunder and Lightning on Writers on Writing on 88.9 FM, KUCI.
You know, reading that just now, I thought, my goodness, it does sound pretty scary. But I think what I'm saying is, if you don't take on writing, take something on and go all the way so you'll know yourself before you die.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we won't drift like, what are the water bugs on the surface of the water all the time?
Yes, yes.
We try this, a little of that, a little of that, and we end up with an empty life.
You've been teaching for a long time before Writing Down the Bones came out, and have there been students that you have actually dissuaded against writing, have said, you know, go do something else, paint, do music, do something else, because this gets kind of messy?
Well, no, to tell you the truth. It seems like once people start writing practice, they fall in love with it, and I have students who've been writing for 15 years now. They just keep going. I teach them how to find a community and to find friends and to support each other and to keep going. So I'm giving you a warning, and yet, look, I write a whole book about how to do the next step.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously, at the same time, I'm deeply in love with it.
Yeah.
But it's the love of an older marriage. It's not my first year in a marriage.
So when Writing Down the Bones came out and became enormously popular, was that surprising to you?
No, in that I was doing writing groups in my living room for quite a while, and I saw people's response, but I wanted to root it. I didn't want it to be Natalie's creative little thing. Everything I say is rooted in 2,000 years of studying the mind in Zen practice. So it's something deep, and you can rely on it, and there's a foundation. What did surprise me was how people ran with it, and after taking, you know, an afternoon class with me, suddenly started teaching it. I'd been, you know, doing it, developing it for over 15 years, and checking with my Zen master all the time to make sure I'd gotten it clear and rooted. And people were just running with it.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, I learned that once you make something public, you lose control and you have to let go.
Hmm.
And I'm okay now. I was very young and I was quite innocent and naive.
You mentioned the end of the writing honeymoon. And how do you know when you're at the end? And what is that?
How do you know you're at the end? What end?
The end of the writing honeymoon, where things now it's becoming...
Oh, you'll know. You'll know. You'll come up against yourself. You know, you'll get scared. Actually, I have students who come to study with me, and they get very high the first time. Mm-hmm. It's very liberating. And then they come again. They can't wait to come back. They come back, and I can see those students in the class, and I think, these people hate me. And then I realized what it was they were coming up against their resistance, which actually, once I explained it to them, meant they're actually more serious because they're getting closer to themselves, and their monkey mind is yelling louder because it's getting scared. And once I explained that, that helped them a lot.
Hmm.
So actually, when you come up against your resistance, that energy, when you turn it, is the tremendous energy of writing.
Yes.
But it gets harder. But I don't mean to say it's just always hard. It's also, I feel such pleasure when I go into a bookstore and see my books there. But even more, the writing of the book is the true pleasure, whether you get published or not. The actual writing is the heaven.
Hmm. Do you feel it? You had said earlier something about feeling it in your belly. And do you also feel it when something you've written is working or not working? Or do your initial readers tell you?
I know when it's flying through me and it's exciting and alive. But that could be a first draft, and I have to work on it a lot more. But how I know is if I leave it and reread it 2 weeks later, it's like the blood has dried and I have more of an objective view. And I know then whether, you know, I've hit home or wherever I am.
What about once you have a draft? Do you spend time on the revision process, and do you like that process?
Yes. I didn't write. I was very, very lucky. I'd been writing by myself and filling notebooks and just doing practice writing for about 13 years. So when I finally wrote a book, Writing Down the Bones was my first book, once I got the structure of those short chapters, it just flew out of me, and I didn't rewrite anything. And the editor at Shambhala Publications never edited one word. I was very lucky. People think I'm lucky, but they forget that I had been practicing for 13 years to get to that place.
And then it was overnight.
Yeah, and then I had a very strong structure, you know, of those short chapters.
Yeah.
And then Wild Mind, my second book, and Long Quiet Highway, I was still so full of the joy of it all. Those three books were very, just came out of me, and there wasn't a lot of revision. The next three books, I was reaching beyond what I already knew, and so I really had to work to find it.
Hmm. What about getting published? What's the downside? Is there a downside?
Oh, yes. It's always quite disappointing. Because first, no one ever will get as excited as you. You'll also be very scared. It feels very naked, exposed. And it's always a little disappointing. Because, you know, the next day you have to get up and brush your teeth. And the next day you have to start writing again from zero.
Mm-hmm. Is there the pressure of outdoing yourself with the next book and the next?
I'm very careful. I've always given myself 100% permission to fail completely. Because if I don't do that, I'll just write Writing Down the Bones over and over, because that's what was successful.
Hmm. Well, you mentioned just exposing yourself and putting yourself out there and on the page. And in this book, you... Again,
Thunder and Lightning.
Yeah, in Thunder and Lightning, you're so open and vulnerable. And how is that? I mean, you know, at this point, I'm sure you don't have anyone looking over your shoulder. But how, when you know your vulnerabilities, how do you continue to put yourself out there?
Well, I go to a cafe and I just write by myself. Each book takes at least 2 years. And and I'm just having a relationship with myself. When people don't realize that when I finish a book, it doesn't come out for at least a year till a year later. So in that year, I have a chance to digest what I've written. And so I'm not, so I know what I've said. So when it comes out in the world, I can stand behind it. Now, see, I didn't know that with Writing Down the Bones. And so I was hurt a lot, and I was very vulnerable. But I guess, and I also just understand publishing now, it's just a business. It's not going to save your life. It's not going to bring love into your life. It's actually, in many ways, makes you more isolated and lonely because you don't meet people at zero anymore. They know. They think they know things about you, and they project things onto you. So I understand all that. I understand what publishing a book does is it gets my book published. If there's a better chance that I can get another book published. And if I'm lucky, I can make a little money and make a living.
How has your life changed, though? I mean, do you have, in a certain way, more confidence when you're writing now? Or do you feel, again, that it's that, yes, you have multiple books out, but you're still starting at zero?
Start at zero. The only thing I've learned deeper and deeper is not to listen to my monkey mind. What I call monkey mind, you might call the editor or critic.
Mm-hmm.
But and actually, if you don't start really naked and vulnerable and open and begin with beginner's mind, the book won't be alive. So you have to be willing to step out there, step off a 100-foot pole every time and not cling to what you knew before.
Mm-hmm. And what about the process of continuing? I have students that I lovingly yell at because they're constantly rewriting chapter one, and I keep telling them to keep going and get to the end before they fiddle with it to death.
I completely agree with you. You need to write the whole thing through. You know, write chapter one, then go to chapter two, then go to chapter three. Write the whole thing through, even if it's a sketchy first draft. Don't get stuck and frozen. You could end up rewriting the first word of the first page for 20 years. No, I can't start it that way. When? Oh, no. You know, and at the end of the day, you have 8 crossed out words.
Right.
That's why writing practice is so great. Go for 10 minutes. Keep your hand moving. Don't look back.
Yes. Well, we're going to take a short break, and we'll be back with Natalie Goldberg, author of many books, including her latest, Thunder and Lightning, Cracking Open the Writer's Craft. Please stay with us. We'll be right back.
Come back, baby, please don't go. No, I love you, darling, hate to see you go. Come back, baby, let's talk it over one more time. My heart's full of sorrow, mama aching tears. Gone 24 hours, child. Seem like 1,000 years. Come back, baby.
And welcome back to Writers on Writing on 88.9 FM, KUCI in Irvine. We're broadcasting from the campus of the University of California, Irvine, and on the web at kuci.org. I'm Barbara DeMarco Barrett, and I'm here today with Natalie Goldberg. Her latest book is called Thunder and Lightning, Cracking Open the Writer's Craft. Published by Bantam. Natalie, you talk so much in this book about plot and story and structure. And you also say something funny here. midway, I think, through the book, that you've read work that is told, tales that are told so well they're boring. Getting, again, I guess the question has something to do with when the story is finished but not overtold, and how a writer knows when it's at that point and not telling it so well that it's boring.
Oh, that's a very good question, and no one has actually ever asked me that.
Oh, good.
I don't know the answer. I know that it has to have life. And actually, if you read it aloud to some other people, even without them commenting, you can feel, if you have the listener's attention, it's almost a physical sensation, or whether their mind wanders.
Hmm.
If you've overworked it, usually their mind wanders. You've lost the life.
Yeah. What about, though, what do you do when, say, you might be reading material to someone that, perhaps that's someone, you're reading, say, literary fiction, and that person or that group of readers doesn't particularly like literary fiction, or you're reading narrative nonfiction to someone who never reads it. How do you tell the difference, or can you even, between, you know, disinterest or just, you know, this just isn't for me? It's kind of like those rejection letters that come in that say, you know, it just isn't for me, and you can't take it personally, and yet you do, but, you know, not confusing.
You can't take
confusing.
It personally, but if everybody rejects it, I'd want to find out, what haven't I done?
Mm-hmm.
I'd figure, I'm not getting something across. But let's say you only send it to 5 people and it gets rejected. That's nothing. Robert Persig, who wrote Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance,
yes,
I know him. He sent it to 40 publishers, and one finally took it.
Mm.
So first of all, you have to have a lot of determination. And then also, you need some friends. You need some writing friends. Not a ton of them, but a few who give you a little feedback, you know, who you get a little something from. Or maybe not even writing friends, someone who just likes to listen. You know, actually, people who don't write are even better. They either like it, they get it, or they don't.
Mm-hmm.
You either get it across or you don't.
Well, what about when you have overtold a story? Can you get it back? Can you work your way back?
Or I wouldn't work my way back. I think I would put that stuff away. I want to say just tear it up and throw it out. And sit down, go 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And get back to the freshness of your mind, of first thoughts, the first way you flash on things before second and third thoughts come. That's why I'm very wary of critique groups. I've never taken any, but once or twice I've sat in, and sometimes something was obviously not good. I mean, it was dead, and people would discuss it for a half hour. Instead of just saying to that person, look, you just didn't get it, and have enough respect for that person has a life and can really connect with it. This is just not happening. Go write something else.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any opinions about MFA programs?
I think if they work for you, again, it's a structure. If a structure of an MFA program is a way to meet other people and to learn things and it works for you, then go for it. I know some people who've been ruined by it, and I also know that people take MFA programs and maybe, I don't know the percentage, but a very small amount end up continue writing, and a lot of people end up going into art administration, etc., which is not bad. You might get a job that way.
Why do you think that is, though? Do you think they've just been demolished in the critique groups in the program, or just having to write to a certain
yeah,
tone,
I think,
standard
I think
style?
Sometimes they get demolished. Sometimes, sometimes it's very hard-hearted and raw. And what the people need more is some encouragement and some hope and some dream. I mean, you do need to get some real feedback, but sometimes you get squashed before you ever grew up, you know, or ever grew.
Sure. Interesting.
You know, you could be a little sprout and be crushed by a shoe.
That's true. that's true. In this book, it might be early on, you debunk the idea of writing what you know. Will you talk about that? Because new writers are always told, well, write what you know.
I know, but, you know, sometimes people write what they know, and you can't just write what you know. For instance, I have a size 9 shoe. I urinate 8 times a day. I go to sleep at 9 at night. I have, I think, maybe 248 hairs on my head. You know, it gets a little boring. Writing just what you know isn't quite enough. You have to imbue it with some life and some story and some connection to a bigger world.
But what about, say, if you're writing a memoir and you have something interesting that, say, happened in your life that's worthy of writing about, but how do you know what to leave out, what to keep in, what you should perhaps embellish a little bit?
Well, first of all, I want to say that when you say you have something interesting that you want to write about, anything can be interesting. Just eating a green pepper, it's the way you enter it and connect with it. But so you can take anything, but how I do it is I just go and let writing do writing and step out of the way. The more I lose control and let writing come through me, the more I'll capture what I need to say. When I use my kind of controlling mind and my editor and my critic, I'm not able to say anything. You know, what did I do for my summer vacation, that old composition we had in school? It's actually a great question, and it could be very rich. But I would clamp up and just say, I had a really good time. It was a lot of fun. It was really nice. Because I didn't know I could write the real details. The real details have so much life. You don't have to add anything.
I was going to comment, actually, on details and your facility with details. Details, again, are one of those things I think that beginning writers have a hard time realizing that they're interesting.
Yeah, they're everything. There is nothing else. Life is made up of detail. And unfortunately, in school, we learn to abstract and move away from experience. Writers stay close to experience. They feel the rain on their face. They know that their pants are gray. They have 5 toes. You know, things that seem ordinary, but those are the real details of life. We don't even dream in the abstract. But somehow we've moved away. The life force is in the details.
Yes.
What does Mies van der Rohe say, the famous architect? God hides in the details.
Mm-hmm. That's a great quote.
Yeah, it is.
Will you read to us again?
Okay, I'd love to.
And you're listening to Writers on Writing, and Natalie Goldberg is going to read once again from Thunder and Lightning, Cracking Open the Writer's Craft, here on 88.9 FM.
Okay, I'm going to read you a long paragraph from a chapter called Old Friend from Far Away, and it's about writing memoir.
Okay.
First, we need to slow down and examine how memory works. I think of the line from the Chinese, old friend from far away, and I imagine a companion shrouded in mist I call to across mountains, the call echoing back. Who is this friend? Where can we find him? We discover that person is only within us. We carry his memory inside. Only there does your father live again and eat Bing cherries, watermelon, and salami slices. Only you know how he swam laps alone, summer after summer at Coney Island, until he won the Brooklyn Freestyle Championship in 1933. At 20, his mother gave him a ruby ring that he never took off. Only you can still see the rubbed gem on his thick fist as he played poker at the kitchen table. As you bite into the heel of a pumpernickel loaf, you are awash with recollection. Flooded with memories, we say. This propels us to write. The thoughts do not come in an orderly fashion. Memoir is connected to the way we remember. Writing memoir is another occasion to study the mind, to deepen our relationship with that most potent writer's tool. But memoir is not sentimental. It does not cling. We write memoir to free ourselves. Those people we love have gone on, one way or another, through death or aging, a second marriage, a move to a new state. Why should we hold on any longer than they did? Here's your chance to make your father alive one last time on the page before you let him go. Don't forget the gray curl at the nape of his neck, the long floppy earlobe, his gorilla walk, arms long and hairy, a step so far to the left he looks as though he'll topple, as though walking was a new discovery, even at 83. What you do not write down will weigh down your father's journey. He needs to go on. He wants to fly. Give him a new life of words and let them take off like electric birds.
Thank you. That's lovely.
Thank you.
You're listening to Writers on Writing. It was Natalie Goldberg reading from Thunder and Lightning. So many questions and so little time. How does teaching affect your writing?
Well, first of all, I deeply love to teach. I'm an old teacher. I have a teaching certificate, and I used to teach in the public schools. Teaching actually deepens my understanding of writing because I have to explain it so that my students understand. So I have to understand it deep enough. Also, I always write with my students, so I get to practice along with them. I show them what we do. I don't stay separate. So actually, I practice with them, and hearing a whole group of people writing stimulates my writing and gives me whole new ideas and angles on things.
Interesting. Well, along those lines, or maybe not along those lines at all, but what do you think is good training for a writer?
Oh.
Apart from classes.
These are great. Well, that is a very good question because I never took a writing class. But I studied Zen for 12 years with a Japanese Zen master. And I always call him my great writing teacher. If you remember in what I read, I said the mind, the most potent of writing tools. Really, what do you have as a writer? Pen, paper, and the human mind. The more you understand it, the better you can work with it. So meditation helped me. Slowing down, walking slow, and taking walks and noticing things, learning the names of things, enjoying your life. And not only just, you know, we suffer a lot, but honor that suffering. Give it language. Speak about it. So really, anything is training for writing, because writing is about waking up to whatever your life is. It doesn't have to be any different than it is right now.
Yeah. When you're working on something, a project as opposed to writing practice, are you ever worrying about whatever you're writing may be hurtful to somebody or may embarrass you?
Yeah, people ask me that. When I wrote Banana Rose, my novel, I was terrified that my ex-husband would sue me or kill me or something. But then I kept saying, Nat, just put it down and you'll worry about it later. Because really, you can't control what other people think. and this is your mind and the way you see things. In that moment, I might have written a different book now. And the odd thing was, I was nervous for 6 years, and when the book came out, I never expected him to have the reaction he did.
How did he react?
He called me and said, "Nat, you must have really loved me. I didn't realize you suffered so much when we broke up."
Interesting.
So actually, he knew me better by reading the book. And, you know, often my father will say, used to say to me, "That isn't the way it is." And I would say to my father, "Dad, this is the way I saw it. You want to write your book? Go write your book and tell how you saw it." So always writers are nervous about that. But you can't let that get in the way. You know, write and don't show it to anyone for a while.
Yeah. What about subtext, or, you know, that texturing that goes on that gives your writing a little more depth? Do you think if you're just writing honestly and throwing everything in, the details and whatnot, that it's just going to have that there? It's going to have subtext. It's going to have depth.
You know, I never even thought of the word subtext. So I hope my stuff has whatever that is.
Well, it does.
Are you talking about sort of a richness?
Yeah, definitely. You know, that texture, that, you know,
yeah,
that layering.
Yeah, the mind already has that if you get out of the way. It's already there. The more you can get out of the way and let writing do writing, let life come through you, the more it will be on the page.
Hmm. Yeah, interesting. It's interesting, something else you say in this book, I think it's actually on page 110, you talk about how you read flap copy or, you know, the dedication or bio notes before you actually read the book to set the stage. I think you were talking about Silko's book,
Ceremony. By Leslie Marmon Silko, yes.
And that, you know, before you started reading the novel, you read other things to kind of warm you up and get you into it. I found that so interesting.
You don't do that?
Well, I do that, and I look at the picture, too. It's like, all right, let me look at this photograph and try to feel who this person
is.
Yes,
of course, because I get excited because it's an adventure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're going into a new book. They're going to take me on a journey. So at first, actually, I'm quite nervous. And also, I want to know, like you say, you know, I want to look at the picture of the author. I want to see who they dedicated it to, who they acknowledge, you know, things like that. I kind of, like, walk around the book for a while before I dive in.
And you also read books more than once.
Oh, yes, if I like a book. Because really, who are our real teachers? Other authors. I study their mind when I'm reading their book. How did they do it? How did they approach it? You know, how do they see the world?
Yes.
It helps to make my mind bigger.
Hmm. We have just a few minutes left, maybe three, and I always have to ask everyone that comes on, if I remember, about agents, and if they have any... either any advice regarding agents or any great agent stories or anything having to do with agents.
Oh, I didn't have a very good agent, but I was so excited. I manifested all the energy. Agents, well, one thing I want to say is sometimes people give agents too much credit and too much... power. They want to do is get a percent and sell books. Now that sounds mean, and there are some wonderful agents, but I was very disappointed at first. I thought my agent and I would have great literary discussions, and he would comment on my book a lot. He didn't do any of that. I sent him the book, and he sent it out and tried to sell it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I feel a little odd because I've switched agents now, and I have a very nice agent, but she hasn't sold a book for me yet, so I don't know what it's going to be like.
Yeah.
But it's not. Agents aren't God, and they don't... This isn't the old world of Hemingway, somehow, where we have some very romantic ideas about that whole world.
Yeah.
It's a business.
That's sometimes hard for writers to accept.
Yes, it is. And... the writing isn't a business. that's not a business. The writing is heaven, even though I tell you it's hard and I warn you. The truth is, it is heaven. You know, but then there are other parts of it.
Yes.
I guess like anything else.
Right.
You know, having children. There's a heaven part and some parts that aren't so heaven.
I'm curious if Writing Down the Bones was, your first book was fully written before you sold it.
Yes, it was. And it was especially a first book. They don't really, it's harder to sell a book not fully written when it's your first book.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, that's a story. I don't know how much time we have, but my agent didn't sell it. He got a few rejections and wanted to give up. And I so I thought, Natalie, you gave your baby to someone else thinking you could let go. You've got to take care of it all the way. Okay, Nat, who do you know in the publishing world? And I knew no one in the publishing world. But then I remembered when I was a hippie in Taos, New Mexico, I used to house it for this man, Michael Fagan, who used to live in a house, a really nice house, and he used to be one of the publishers for Shambhala. Many years ago, I called him up and said, you know, this book is kind of about Buddhism, but nobody would know it because I've made it into the vernacular. He said, send it to Emily Sell, the editor at Shambhala. And so I sent it to her. I called her, and I told her what it was about. She said, send it right off. I sent it to her, and she never read it. But luckily, Shambhala is in Boston. My cousin's son was being bar mitzvahed. In a million years, I wouldn't usually go to that bar mitzvah. But because Shambhala was in Boston, I thought I better go. So I went, and I called Emily and said, oh, you know, I'm going to be in town. Can we get together? So sure enough, she read the manuscript in the morning before we met for lunch.
Hmm.
And we met for lunch, and she said, we want the book. She said it right away. She said, I haven't finished it, but we want it. And I acted very blasé. And I said, well, you'll have to talk to my agent. She said, well, does he want a lot of money? As though it had nothing to do with me. I said, well, I have no idea. And I acted very blasé, but I remember she took me to a nice restaurant, and she said, you don't want dessert, do you? And I said, oh, yes. And I got a big ice cream ball rolled in toasted coconut with hot fudge over it. And it was just wonderful. I had no money at the time. I was in my late 30s, and I'd been rarely taken out to a nice restaurant for lunch. And I acted very blasé, and when I left her, I walked in the streets of Boston weeping, saying, somebody wants my book.
That's a great story.
And then my agent stepped in and sold it, so he didn't do very much.
Oh,
but I don't mean to badmouth agents. Some agents have been wonderful, and, you know, and my agent, you know, connected me with Tony Burbank at Bantam, who I worked with for 12 years and actually dedicated Thunder and Lightning to.
Yes.
So I'm always thankful for that.
Natalie, tell us your website.
Oh, www.nataliegoldberg.com.
Excellent. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
It's been totally wonderful.
It was really wonderful to talk to you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
That was Natalie Goldberg, author of many books, including her latest Thunder and Lightning, Cracking Open the Writer's Craft, published by Bantam. Oh, if you'd like to be on the mailing list for the show, email me at writersonwriting@earthlink.net or visit my website, writersonwriting.com. And I want to leave you with a quote by Jessamine West, who said, "Talent is helpful in writing, but guts are absolutely necessary." This is 88.9 FM, KUCI in Irvine, California. I'm Barbara DeMarco Barrett, and thank you for listening.